Okay, good morning and welcome. We're here to talk about access permission lists, ACLs. Anybody that's done this and tried to map between disparate systems like the Evil Empire and a reasonable Unix box knows how difficult this is. Andreas has come to us from Austria to give us a talk on this. We'd like to make him welcome. Thank you.
Hello. It's a great pleasure for me to get a chance to present my work here. And I'm glad to see this many people. My name is Andreas Grünberger. I'm working for Novell. Used to be SUSE, and that's the company that spread all the floppy stuff and merged around yesterday, all over the place. The magnetic feet, the cute ones. Overview. I'm gonna first tell you my motivation behind the whole project, then explain different file permission models, or give a very short introduction, then discuss a few existing approaches in this field, then describe how NFS before access control lists fit into the POSIX environment, into the POSIX permission model. I'm briefly going to mention the project that is implementing this for Linux, and at the end there is a short resume. So the motivation for this project. We've got many organizations nowadays that have mixed computing environments that include Unix machines and Windows machines and Linux machines. We're getting more Unix and Linux machines on desktops nowadays. Hopefully this will still increase. The old joke being that this will be the year of the desktop and so on. We'll see about that. Supporting these environments is extremely important. The different access control list models are one of the problems that you run into in these areas. So we've got the Unix systems that implement the POSIX permission model. Almost all systems also implement POSIX access control lists, which are not really POSIX. I'll come to that later. On the other hand, we've got Windows, and Windows implements a completely different access control list model. And the impedance match between those two models is surprisingly big. So the result of this is that users are seeing strange effects when, for example, when using a SambaServe file system on a Windows box, they see permissions disappearing, they see strange entries appearing, disappearing, all sorts of things. In the end, we really tried to leave the POSIX access control list alone. In the end, it turned out that they were not good enough, and now we should try something different. The question is whether NFS before access control lists are good enough and can help us in avoiding lots of these artifacts that we get currently with POSIX access control lists. And my answer to that is pretty much yes. So file permission models. We've got the traditional Unix file permission model that is standardized in the POSIX 1003.1 standard. It's a very simple model. It's got three classes of users, which is the owner, the owning group, and others. Each of these classes is associated with three permissions read, write, execute. Everyone in this room knows this. Per file, per inode, this permission model takes only a little bit of space. It's relatively simple. It can be taken to relatively complex scenarios by playing various sorts of tricks. Every Unix operating system has them. They are supported by NFS and other protocols. The surprising fact about these access control lists is that while everybody doing Unix knows them, almost nobody doing Windows understands what's going on, how that stuff works. Sort of an extension to the POSIX permission model or the POSIX draft access controller. There used to be a working group, and the standard number they were trying to create was 1003.1e. That working group was working on access control lists and capabilities and mandatory access control and audit. So lots of different things. And in the end, it turned out after working on that stuff for many years that this was just a too big endeavor to manage in one piece. And so the working group got dissolved and we never got a formal access control list standard. How do those access control lists look? Well, we've still got the owning group and others, like with the basic POSIX permission model, but then we've also got entries for additional users and groups. We've still got read, write, and execute permissions, only no fancy extended permissions, but now we can assign those permissions not only to the classes, but also to those additional users and groups on a per user and per group level. And the working group was very careful to create the POSIX access control list extension in a way so that it works very well with the POSIX permission model. And you don't run into strange effects. There's some proprietary support in the NFSv3 access control list. Every Unix vendor that supports NFSv4 access control list over NFS does it in a different way. The Linux implementation uses the same protocol as the Solaris implementation does. There's also some support on NFSv2 for that. On the Evil Empire side, we've got CIFS access control lists. CIFS is the common internet file system as Microsoft tried to position it. Didn't quite work out. But anyway. So what have we got there? We've got a lot more permissions than read write execute, like things, permission to delete a specific file, permission to change permissions, or sorts of things. We've got two kinds of entries. On the POSIX side, you can only allow permissions. On the SIP side, you can allow and deny permissions. And so we've got allow and deny entries in access control lists. We've got actually two different inheritance models in CIFS access control lists, which makes them pretty complicated. They basically work like a little program, so you step through the access control list in order to figure out which access is allowed. POSIX access control lists work somehow differently. They were introduced with Windows NT and the NTFS file system, and they're used in the CFS protocol, of course, and Samba also supports them over the protocol. What Samba tries to do is to map CIFS access control lists to POSIX access control lists, because Unix systems don't support, or most don't support CIFS access control lists. And that's where we run into the problems with. Oh, and then we've got the NFSv4 access control list. They are modeled after CIFS access control lists, but the good thing is that some of the weirdnesses that the CIFS access control lists have are gone, which makes NFSv4 access control lists somewhat more appropriate in Unix environments. On the downside, the interactions with POSIX and the basic POSIX model of doing things are not very well defined. Inside the RFC that defines NFSv4 access control lists, that's RFC 3530. The good thing is that those gaps in the specifications appear to be fixable. In fact, NFSv 4.1 will include some clarifications so that you can do the Unix thing better, slightly better in NFSv 4.1. They didn't include any massive changes to the access control list model, but clarifications. So NFSv 4.0 servers will still work the same way as 4.1 servers from the network point of view. The Linux NFSv4 daemon maps between NFSv4 access control lists on the wire to POSIX access control lists, much like Samba does it. slightly different algorithms, so, but in the end you run into similar problems. Okay, existing approaches, what have we got there out in the field? We've got NAS appliances from NetApp and EMC, and SGI has got something similar. Both of these companies offer multi-protocol NAS devices, so you can access those devices with FTP and NFS and probably NFS v4.2 and SIFS, of course, for all the Windows boxes. What those boxes implement is the basic POSIX permission model, no POSIX access control lists. And in addition to that, they implement CIFS access control lists. The strange thing is that either mode or access control list, whatever is set last, like you set an access control list and then that access control list becomes active, whatever is set last wins and determines how permissions are controlled on that file. Samba 4 development. Samba 4, it's not a finished product, it's all work in progress. Implements CIFS access control lists in user space inside the Samba daemon and stores them as extended attributes on the file system. That's nice for Samba itself, it makes Samba more portable and all. The downside is that if you implement things like that in the daemon, then all other processes on the running on the same machine are subject to a different permission model than the clients behind the Samba server, which is extremely bad because it locks all the nice things that you can do in Unix systems pretty much out. You can't simply run scripts, allow users to run scripts on that box or all sorts of things. We've got two file systems from IBM, JFS2 and IBM GPFS. Both are closed source.
And you can get the source code for Linux 105 GPFS, but Linux is not the
one to do. Okay. These files are interesting because they support, like the NAS boxes, they support the traditional POSIX permission model. But then they also support NFSv4 access control lists natively on the file system. They've got the same disadvantages than NAS boxes too, in that the last permission that you set determines access. So again, the same problems. Solaris ZFS is under the Solaris license, so it's not GPL compatible. And they implement NFSv4 access control lists natively too. They've try to write up some weird mapping algorithms, pretty complicated. I didn't understand them really. It's got some surprising corner cases. So I think this is the approach to go at least, or the way to go. Let me summarize the problems with these existing approaches again. We've got the NAS approach, and this, like when you set an access control list and then you set a mode, then all the permissions that you carefully crafted in access control list are no longer active, and that's a very bad idea, I think. Especially it's bad when you access the same data from mixed operating systems, like you'll get when you get more and more Unix desktops. Of course, the Windows in companies, the Windows desktops won't go away anytime soon. So you need to find some way to make both worlds work together as well. Then there is the Samba 4 approach, good for Samba, not so good for Linux, wouldn't strengthen our position. And then there's the problem with the RFC 3530 specification, in that it doesn't really specify very well the interactions between the traditional POSIX permission model and the NFSv4 access control list. The result of this is that different NFSv4 implementations will have various interesting incompatibilities in this area. The good thing of leaving all these things open is that you can implement NFSv4 access control lists in a POSIX compatible way. And that's what I'll describe in this talk. Okay, what makes NFSv4 access control lists interesting for us? they are close to CISS access control lists, which makes mapping between them and between CISS and NFSv4 access control lists relatively easy. There are some things that you need to take care of, but it's a magnitude less complicated than the same mapping for POSIX access control lists. They can be implemented in a fully POSIX compliant way. Some of the weirdnesses that CISS includes and allows are gone in NFSv4. They are standardized by ADI-TF, so it's a much more neutral ground than implementing CISS access control lists. I don't think that CISS standard even includes all the access control list specifications. So basically, we would be cloning Microsoft there if we hadn't had this NFSv4 specification, which already specifies them well enough. Okay, let's look at how the POSIX permission model can be combined with access control lists. We've got the basic POSIX permission model again. As I've mentioned before, file owner, owner group, other three classes of users. We've got three permissions for each of these classes. The permission check algorithm in the basic POSIX permission model can be described as follows. Some process requests a specific access, for example, read and write, like combinations of permissions. Then the first thing that the basic POSIX permission model does, it tries to figure out which of these three classes the process is in that is requesting the access. This is the picture here. I've got my cursor, yes. So you branch out here, and you end up with one of these three classes, and then you've got the file mode, which has all the permissions bits in, and the class determines which of these permissions determine the access, and that's it. Okay. POSIX allows some extensions to this very basic model. If that's not about POSIX access control, it's perfectly fine inside the POSIX standard that all the Unixes implement. One of these is that the group class may have implementation-defined members, which could be additional users or additional groups. So the group class doesn't only have to contain the owning group, but there can be other entries. One other provision that we have in the standard is that there may be additional restrictions. Examples for this are LSM modules, like SA Linux, access control lists, of course, things like that. It's also possible to have some permissions granted that go beyond the permissions granted in the file mode. And POSIX defines that those mechanisms may only be enabled by explicit per-file mechanisms. And the effect of this is that after applying a mode to a file, change mod, then you're guaranteed that there are no strange permissions going beyond the mode on that file. That's what it says here. Okay, so now briefly looking at POSIX draft access controllers, even though this talk doesn't focus on them, they have additional entries which are in the group class, like you can have additional users and additional groups listed in the access control list. We've still got read write execute permissions. We've got inheritance at file create time only, which is much simpler than the CFS inheritance schemes that are specified there. The access check algorithm is very similar to the basic POSIX access control list access check algorithm. What you do is you select one of the entries from the access control list, and then you check whether this entry provides the requested accesses, and you, in addition, check whether the mode provides the requested includes the requested accesses. So you always also check the mode, and I've tried to visualize this here by having three stages. First, you determine the class that the process is in. Then you check the mode. Then you check the access control. The order doesn't really matter. Okay, NFS before access control lists. There are some differences compared to POSIX access control lists under the POSIX model. We've got many more fine-grained permissions that go beyond read, write, execute. Some of them don't go beyond read, write, execute, but split up existing permissions, appending to a file, which is a subset of writing to a file. We've also got allow and deny entries in this type of access control list. We've got inheritance for directories and for files separate, so you can specify that directories inherit a completely different access control list than files do. In the POSIX model, that's all merged into one type of inheritance. The access check algorithm works like this. Again, a process requests some access, read-write in this case, this example, and then you go through the access control list, and for each entry, where first you ignore the entries that don't map the process, for user entries, you get the idea. I don't have to go into these details that deep. When you hit an allow entry, then that matches the requesting process, then all the permissions in the allow entry are no longer considered in the decision-making process. When all permissions have been allowed, like there are no open requests anymore, then access is allowed. If there's any permission that is denied in a deny entry, then access is denied. That's the basic idea. So if we want to try to use that kind of access control list in a POSIX environment with the POSIX permission model, we have to honor the POSIX permission model in addition, of course, which means that we must not grant permissions that go beyond the file mode. There are different ways how, when applying a mode to a file, you can achieve you can ensure that the access control list doesn't grant anything that goes beyond the mode. One would be to remove permissions from the access control list. Another would be to insert deny entries before allow entries. This all gets pretty complicated. And so my approach and my idea was to use the same model, basically, that you kind of also use for POSIX access control lists, and to check the mode in addition to checking the permissions in the access control list. So if the mode doesn't allow an access, that access won't be allowed. Okay. So looking at interoperability between different operations in a combined kind of model, we've got two kinds of set operations that can happen. We've got two kinds of query operations that can happen. Like you set an access control list, you set a mode, you get an access control list from the operating system, you get a mode from the operating system. All these operations are relevant, of course. Basically, what you want when you set a mode is you want to get the same mode out again. When you set an access control list, you want to get exactly the same access control list out again. If you set an access control list, you want exactly the permissions that are defined in the access control list to be active. If you set a mode, you could say that one of the views is that only the permissions in the mode are being checked. That's the NAS approach. But it would be much more clever to check the permissions that both the mode and the present access control list allows. So this leads into a problem. You have a file that has an access control list and a file, and you apply a mode to that file. Now the mode is more restrictive than the access control list. If somebody after that queries the access control list, then what do you return to the user? You can't return the original access control list because it would indicate that more permissions are granted. So if the user does a round trip and sets the same access control list on the file again, you'd get increased privileges. Another aspect that's interesting that you want to preserve is when a user does a change mode on a file to something like a restrictive mode, like mode 0, and then does a change mode to a less restrictive mode again, then it's a very bad thing to restrict the permissions to the first mode. So what you, so the effect that you want is that when you do the second change mode, you want all the permissions that are in the access control list and in the mode granted again. The same scenario happens when you create a file with a very restrictive create mode and afterwards change mode the file to a less restrictive mode. You don't want to have all the permissions in the access control list kicked out of that because of that. So how can we deal with this? This is the case where a file has an access control list. You apply a mode, a more restrictive mode, a mode that is more restrictive than the access control list to that file. What do you want to return as the access control list in that case? The goal is to compute a new access control list that grants exactly the same permissions that both the access control list and the mode, so this two pair of things together allow. I can't really go into all the details of this algorithm because it's very lots of details. It's not really that complicated, but I want to give you the idea of it here at least. The algorithm is a quadratic complexity. The fortunate thing is that the number of entries is relatively small for access control lists. So I'm not sure, but I expect this to be not such a big practical problem. Another detail that's interesting, even though we can compute these dumped down access control lists, we usually don't have to because for permissions checks, we can just check the original access control list and the mode and combine the two results. So even though this algorithm is somewhat complex, we don't have to run it in all the very common operations that are happening in file systems. In this example, you apply a mode of 604, which is read-write, nothing and read, to an access control list that grants access, read-write access to everyone. So what you do in this case, what you end up in this case is an access control list that has this everyone entry split up into a remaining everyone entry that only grants read access from the other class. Then you inject, you end up with a deny entry here that denies read access to the group class. And you end up with an owner entry for that allows read-write access because of these read-write bits in the mode here and the permissions that the owner is granted for this everyone entry. So that's the basic idea. There's a slight corner case here. I'm not going into details on that one. Okay. What we didn't cover yet is the NFSE for access control list model has additional permissions that go beyond what we have with read, write, execute. On the one hand, when you set an access control list that includes things like delete a file, you want to be this delete file permission to be active. On the other hand, if we compute permissions like I described before, then the mode would automatically filter out all these extended permissions. So what do we do here? We can play a little trick. We can replace the mode by something else. I'm calling it masks here. So what you do when setting an access control list is you're computing the masks And you're setting the access control list when setting a mode, you update the masks. And so the synchronization between mode and mask is pretty tight. Basically, when you set the mode, all the extended permissions in the mask are automatically taken out, whereas when you set an access control list, there may be extended permissions that get enabled in the masks. That's the synchronization part. Okay, so this gives us this property of the mapping that we desire, that setting an access control list will result in the permissions in this access control list to be active. And we can still restrict, we can still get all that POSIX permission model requirements implemented very easily. Okay, so this was the basic idea of this model. Let's look at some of the benefits and drawbacks of it. On the positive side, this approach offers better interoperability than anybody else today offers, better than the MAS approach, better than the VFS approach. No permission information is lost almost. The case where you lose permission information is where you have a file that has an access control list, you apply a restrictive mode to it, you query the access control list, and you set the access control list again, which is what Windows client might do. In this case, there is not really anything you can do about it. If you implement these access control lists on a Linux system, natively on the file system, then Linux applications can fully transparently use the on these systems, all the POSIX provisions are there, so the applications will still work. But we also get the Windows semantics out of it that we need for serving to SIFS clients. On the negative side, there is a second access control list model to understand because of that. It's not completely trivial. There's a bit of theory behind it, involved behind it, and things like that. Another big minus is that this combined model is not compatible with POSIX access control lists. So I think the same decision at this point would be to no longer support POSIX access control lists if NFSv4 access control lists are active on a file system. You may still want to map between POSIX draft access control lists and NFSv4 access control lists in some cases, like when you have a POSIX access control list file system existing already, and we still want to talk CFS for that file system. So POSIX access control lists probably won't go away completely. There's also an inheritance scheme called automatic inheritance in Win2K. That we don't have very good answers to at the moment. Okay, so all of this stuff has been implemented. In this implementation, we've got support for the X3 file system. The NFSv4 access control lists are stored as extended attributes, like the POSIX access control lists are. The access control list model can be chosen at mount time. This might become a file system create time option or something like that, but this is just a basic demo implementation, and for that that's good enough. The project website at the URL I'm giving here includes design documents, the kernel patches, the user space utilities, some test cases, all the basic stuff that you need. Okay, I'm skipping over the demo because we're running out of time. So this basically shows how the command line utilities work. Okay, the status of this project is that working code has been posted to the kernel mailing list in September. There hasn't been that much feedback on it yet, but there's a lot of interest from companies to improve things in this area. There are lots of things that still need to be done, including support for other file systems, support in the NFSv4 server and client in the Linux kernel, support for extended permissions, maybe in the VFS. That's all things to be discussed still. supporting the CSS file system, Samba 3 and Samba 4 support, utilities for converting file systems between the two models offline, things like that. So my conclusion, my resume on this is that, again, mixed operating system environments will become more important in the future. Good file sharing capabilities are an essential part of that. NFS for access control is, can significantly improve the situation that we have right now. The proposed approach allows to cleanly implement them in a POSIX system without any real nasty corner cases. And so the hope is that in the end, it will allow us to grab a lot more of the Windows and NAS market space than we can grab now. Okay, thank you.
Hello, thanks for the talk. I've got two questions to ask. One was about set group ID and set user ID permissions. How do you have a sort of strategy for mapping them to ACL? The first question. And the second question is just on slide 20 about, I didn't quite understand what you were talking about, group class may have implementation defined members. I don't know if that's a proprietary thing or whether it's something that applies to Linux. Are my two questions clear?
Yes, they are.
Okay, thank you.
So the first question, I'm sorry, I forgot the first question.
SQID.
Okay, SQID and SGID. So those things are don't really have anything to do with access control lists per se. They have to do with how processes, mostly how processes, when processes get started, which IDs they get. You're right that there is they have some meaning for directories. Sticky directories. So the idea there would be to preserve the restrictions that sticky directories imply. But still, this is not part of the access control list.
So there's no ACL implement. There's no kind of need to implement.
There's no need to implement any ACL. There's no involvement, if you like, for the ACL.
You don't need it in the access control list. Every inode has these bits, and you can combine them with the access control list just fine. And the other question. I hope I can explain this with this in this picture. You've got the process, and you decide which of these three classes a process is in, right? And assuming you have an access control list that includes an entry for, say, a user Joe, and for the owning group, and for the owner, and for everyone, right? Then the question is which class this user Joe is in. And so the answer that POSIX allows is that user Joe gets assigned to the group class.
If Joe is not the owner,
exactly. Yeah.
So that's the meaning of your first sentence on this slide?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for the question.
So there's going to be some code going to the kernel for this at some point. What are the prospects of that appearing? Well, when is it likely to happen, do you think?
So my expectation is that we're going to polish these patches, complete them, and get them into a vendor solution first. And start discussing more details of this whole stuff on the kernel mailing list. And I can't give any deadlines or anything like that for this project.
So it's likely
to be a future SUSE kernel. It might be a future SUSE kernel or maybe some NAS company that is running Linux as their operating system on NAS might pick it up, or something like that.
I'm not sure if you mentioned this earlier, but what sort of license will all of these patches be under? Is that decided yet, or?
So it's kernel patches, and the only thing you can get in the kernel is GPL code.
It's just you have mentioned proprietary extensions.
That's right, I didn't think about it.
Any more questions?
It seems extraordinary to me that you can implement the code and then apply it to different file systems. I would have thought that integrating these access control lists with the different kinds of file systems would be a great challenge, and one that would it would be quite hard, I would imagine, to that you've implemented the code so far is great. To integrate it with different file systems, is that as much of a challenge as I imagine it to be?
We've got the great situation that many file systems nowadays support extended attributes as a mechanism for storing some blobs of information, associating some blobs of information with files. And as soon as you use extended attributes as the underlying mechanism, it becomes relatively simple. There is probably three-thirds of the code that is file system unspecific, and just a little bit of glue code that ties the extended attributes together with the permission model and with setting and getting attributes and things like that. So it's not really that complicated.
One question. If you were implementing this, why didn't you choose to do a user-space daemon and then tie in with Samba project and try and do it both ways and then get the file systems to tie into that?
I probably didn't quite get the question.
After hearing most of the talks talking about user space and keeping as much as possible in the user space.
That you mean, so you would implement the file system permission model in user space and have all the permission inquiries going back to user space from kernel to user space and back. That would be a huge overhead, completely unpractical.
But then again, it's pretty much impossible to ignore because you get easily into
Think about your daemon that decides about permission models reading a random file. You get very nice recursion on that. So a permission checking model belongs per definition into the same space the file system driver runs in. If you have a microkernel model where your file system is in user space, you could of course easily have permission checking user space, but you better have it in the same server as the file system driver or one that doesn't have any file system access. Well, they have the traditional Unix permission model and they just do it in their file system driver, which is a server that is separate but closely tied to the kernel.
Okay. Is that it? Okay, if we can thank Andreas.
Thank you.